The National Institutes of Standards and Technology finalizes its guidance for contractors, research centers, and other organizations that handle sensitive federal information. Ron Ross is a fellow at NIST, here to review the guidelines for the information called Controlled Unclassified Information. Ron, it's great to talk to you, my friend. I hope all is well with you. Thank you for coming on the program today. This is NIST Special Publication 800-171. What is Controlled Unclassified Information for us to start with? Thanks for coming on today.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Francis. CUI, Controlled Unclassified Information, is a term that came out of an executive order that was signed by the president in 2010. And under that executive order, the executive order assigned to the National Archives and Records Administration to be the executive agent and stand up a program to really get a handle on all of the different data types that are used within the federal government. And so the initial part of that executive order and what NARA was undertaking is to try to define all the different data types within the federal government that may be classified as controlled unclassified information. And what CUI really is it's any information that is called out specifically in legislation, regulations, or in a government-wide policy that requires special handling or safeguarding of that information. So they worked with all the federal agencies over the past couple of years to come up with all these data types that they're calling CUI, and those are now in the National Archives and Records Administration registry. They can be observed, and each of those, they're all under categories and subcategories, so they're very easily to search and to see what those data types are. And the second half of the project now, NARA has been working with NIST to help define security requirements for how that CUI is to be protected. There's a lot of CUI within the federal information systems world, and the part of their responsibility is to define what protections the feds need to apply for that type of information. And where the 800-171 comes into play, whenever that type of information goes outside of federal control into what we call non-federal organizations or non-federal systems, the 171 helps define protection requirements for that type of information when it's outside of direct federal control.
Ron, the non-federal organizations thing, how did you go about breaking down those classifications to decide if it's here in one particular type, say a contractor's database, it should be handled one way, or if it's in a, let's say, an academic organizations, a college, universities, place, it should be another handled another way, or isn't that it? Is the CUI supposed to be handled the same way whenever it's outside a federal organization?
One of our design principles was to not have what we call a two-state solution, where the requirements for protecting CUI on the federal side were different than those on the non-federal side. So the 171, the requirements that came out of this project are consistently applied, whether they end up in a contractor system or whether it ends up in a system that's in a university or a college or a state, local, or tribal government. That consistency is really important to organizations who end up either in a contractual relationship or as part of an agreement or memorandum of understanding, end up having CUI within their systems. And this gives them a consistent view of how that information should be protected while it's in their custody.
The release on this from your colleagues at NIST say the guidelines are drawn from existing computer security requirements for federal information systems found in two of NIST's foundational information security documents. What's FIPS 200 and NIST SP 800-53, Ron?
Well, yes, those are the two of our foundational security publications that really go back to the very roots of the program when FISMA was first passed by Congress and signed by the President back in 2002 and 2003. And one of our first publications that we wrote was FIPS 200. This is 17 basic security requirements that are applied to every federal information system. Now, those requirements are stated at a fairly high level, as you would expect in a FIPS publication. And what makes those requirements more granular is in the 800-53 publication. That's been out since 2005. And those are all of our security and privacy controls that give you a little more detail on how to satisfy those 17 top-level requirements. So when it came to developing the requirements for protecting CUI, we started with those basic requirements in the FIPS 200. And we also started with the moderate baseline. That's kind of the middle level baseline of our security controls. And then we did a whole lot of tailoring. And we tried to distill from those basic requirements and security controls what things were essential that we should pass on to our folks on the other side who are going to be trying to protect this information. And so we were able to take those basic requirements from the FIPS and the security control catalog, and we tried to scope them down to focus only on confidentiality, because that's what the executive order requires NARA to focus on, the protection of the information from a confidentiality point of view, protecting against unauthorized disclosure. So any controls or requirements that were focused on availability, for example, those were tailored out. We also took out things that were uniquely federal. In many of our security controls, those controls focus on things that only the federal government does, and they're not really applicable to non-federal organizations. And the third category of tailoring, which was very important, we eliminated many of the controls and requirements from the FIPS 200 and 853, where we assumed that organizations were already doing those kinds of activities. We assumed that in today's world, when you're using information technology, that there will be a basic level of security and best practices applied in the systems that are in the non-federal world. So we made some assumptions that we didn't have to tell the contractors or the non-federal organizations on every one of these specific requirements, so those were tailored out as well. And what we ended up with were a very tight set of controls across 14 families that will be absolutely essential in helping to protect the confidentiality of the controlled unclassified information.
You mentioned that the document Security and Privacy Controls for Federal Information Systems and Organizations, SP 853, was out in 2005. How has the concept of protecting information, whether it's CUI or some other level of information, how has that changed in the decades since that's come out?
You know, that's a question we get asked a lot, because as you observe all of these cyber attacks across the last several years, the adversaries, the malicious code, the malware has become a lot more sophisticated. There's a lot more bad actors out there. They're coming at you from every direction. And the value, there's a lot of high-value targets in the federal government and in the private sector. But I believe the fundamentals of protecting information and systems has not changed all that much. There's fundamentals in almost any profession, whether you're playing football and you're learning how to block and tackle before you start to go to the fancier plays. We have the same concepts in the federal government and the private sector. There are certain things that have to be done today when you want to protect information, whether you're on the federal side or the private sector side. And those are the fundamentals that are in the NIST security controls that are especially that appear in our baselines. We have the low, the moderate, and the high impact baselines based on how important the information is to you and to your business or your mission. So in some sense, we have a very customizable and tailorable set of controls, but there's also a set of fundamentals that have to be applied today. In other words, we need to bring our A game all the time to this problem, because the adversary is definitely doing that on their side.
And something you and I have talked about before is the mindset change that has to happen. It's terrific that you and NARA have put this guidance out there, and it will be wonderful if people follow it, and they need to. But that's not enough, it doesn't seem to me.
No, guidance is guidance. Standards are standards. And we do the best job we can to provide the best practices for all of our customers, whether the customers are on the federal side or the private sector side. But every organization today, they have a lot of information technology. There's a lot of information, a lot of components, software, hardware, and firmware. And there's have to be some fundamental decisions made about doing what we call criticality analysis, making sure that you're able to segregate the information and the processes, the systems that are really critical to your business or your mission, and then taking special care to make sure the appropriate safeguards are put into place for those, for that subset of the overall things that you do. That's becoming increasingly hard to do because the complexity of our IT infrastructure is growing by the day. As more and more features are offered to the customers, every vendor or manufacturer's new feature is also increased attack surface for the adversary. And so it takes a lot of discipline and structure and rigor to be able to reduce that complexity, understand what's critical, and then bring the right level of protection to that part of the problem. So these things are not always handled by some of the higher-level security controls. You actually have to go into the architecture and the engineering aspects of the system to make sure you do have domain separation. You can isolate information that's more critical, and you can put up the increasing levels of defense in depth that are required to slow down the adversary, or as we say, harden the target first. If they get through, limit the damage to the target. So when that malware comes through the network, it doesn't burn down the whole house. You can constrain it and confine it. And then lastly, we must have systems that are resilient, being able to withstand the first strike and to continue to operate even in a degraded or a debilitated state. That's a tall order. We have a lot of work to do to get there yet, but we're well on our way to starting down that path.